Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Apologies then, this is the policy bit. This is the bit that can get a bit dry. But it needs to be, and there needs to be some rules there, essentially. What I want to do is take about 20 minutes now and just take you through the rules of membership, try and do this document here, try and demystify it a little bit. But before I do that, can I ask a few questions just to give me an idea of how to gauge this? How many members of the Federation do we have here at the moment? If you raise your hand for me, indicate if you're currently a member of the Federation. Okay, so we've got a few members of the Federation already. And how many people here have read the Rules of Membership document? Oh, well, that's much better than I thought. Okay, great. Thank you for that. Okay, in terms of policy framework, we'll start at the outset and say that there's one mandatory document that you need to be aware of within the Federation, and that's the Rules of Membership. There are, framed around that, a whole load of advisory documents, which I've listed there for you, dealing with various aspects of the Federation. They are advisory, they're not mandatory. You don't have to do it the way that, for example, the Federation Technical Specification sets it out, but it's easier if you do it that way. It's easier to take that sort of approach, and it's probably easier if you're trying to debug it and we're trying to help you find where the faults are if you take a different route. But you can choose to implement it in any way you wish. What we've just set out in the recommendations there is based on the experience and that has been gained from operating the Federation, putting the test federations together over the last few years. This is best practice, essentially. So that's what we've defined for you there. The rules of membership itself, this document that I've been waving about, runs to 12 pages currently. It's going to go to 13 pages soon with some explanatory notes at the back. Split up into 13 sections, which I've listed there for you, and it forms the basic contractual framework for trust. So this is the main document that everybody refers back to. It's been split down into 13 sections, mainly for readability, and I'm going to go through each of those sections now and try and give you a flavour without standing here reading the document to you of what's in there and which the various sections mean. But it is quite accessible. It's written, hopefully, to be quite accessible rather than too legalistic in any way. So by way of introduction, it starts off and says the purpose of the Federation is to create a framework within which members can exchange access management information that is responsible in a way that respects end-user privacy. And that's really one of the key points here, trying to respect end-user privacy. The Federation, or the trust fabric that has been established, allows users to browse around the various resources that are available without their IDP releasing any personal details about them. So this is what was mentioned by Mark just a moment ago, targeted ID. So what the service provider has is an anonymous identifier about someone. So they know it's the same person coming back, and if there's any misuse, then they can go along to the service provider and say, this is that unique handle that's causing problems or abuse the license conditions. And between the service provider and the identity provider, they can match those two up. But once they're separated, the service provider doesn't know any personal information and can't find out any personal information, but they can still tailor the service because they know it's the same person coming back. So you select a different screen color, select a different view, tailor the service in any way you require. So you're getting the best of both worlds, essentially. You can browse without releasing personal data and protect end-user privacy. If particular services require things like a username to be released, then you can do that in a controlled way. And I'll go on to say a little bit more about that as I separate down each of the elements within the document itself. Section 1 really is just talking about definitions. So if you want to look up the definition of an attribute, it's defined in there. If you want to look at what a metadata is defined as, again, it's defined in there. And so it deals with all of the terminology that's used in the document itself. Section 2 deals with membership. And I've just really extrapolated some of the three key points that talks about in that section. Membership, then, it's conditional on the member, hardly surprising, really, accepting and abiding by the rules. And by member, we mean here the service provider or the identity provider. So it's the education organisation or it's the commercial organisation providing services. We do see some educational organisations providing services, and I think that will develop more in the future as well. So it's best to talk about an IDP or a service provider in terms of role, not whether they're a particular X, Y, or Z. The second point here is really quite important to try and grasp. Going back to the slide that Mark introduced you to in the last presentation, we're talking about A member acknowledges that membership does not grant automatic access rights to resources. It's that, if you can remember back to that slide with the triangle, it's the site license underneath that exists between the identity provider and the service provider that controls access to resource. That license is the same as it is now. There's no change there. What we're talking about in Federation terms is merely the mechanism for gaining access to the resource. So the site license stays the same, the service provider and the identity provider stay the same. This is just a different mechanism for doing the authentication and authorization of users. And the Federation operator at the end there has a stick, so ultimately, if there's a problem, we can take action to protect other members. So if there's abuse and there's no, and we're not getting to the bottom of it, or from either the service provider end or the identity provider end, then we can take action as the operator to remove someone from the Federation. So that's the ultimate stick in this approach, and that's set out in point two. Section three is rules applying to all members then. Statements must be accurate and up to date, fairly obvious stuff. A member must not act in a manner which damages the Federation in any way. You've got to grant us rights to actually publish your metadata. And metadata essentially is details of where your identity provider service is and some of the services that you provide. So we've got to be able to publish that information about your organisation so that the service provider knows where to point the various bits of the infrastructure, where to point the various services to. So we've got to be able to do that. You must give reasonable assistance. We're in a federation, we're all in this together, and we're all trying to make a better way of taking forward the user experience in this area. So you must give reasonable assistance to other members if you're investigating misuse. It's always, you know, if you're on one end of this particular stick, if you're trying to trace misuse, it's quite difficult sometimes. And equally, if you're trying to, if someone's constantly ringing you up trying to chase misuse, it's quite annoying at the other end. But it is something, it's the world we live in. People do try and abuse systems, so you do need to help each other in doing that. You should use reasonable endeavours to comply with the technical specifications, going back to something I was saying earlier. These are recommendations, so we recommend you take it, you go down that route. And what's written in here is you use reasonable endeavours to do it. If you want to design your systems in a different way, if you want to implement in a different way, go in a different direction, you're free to do that. They are recommendations. But there's just a point in here to say, you know, try to do it. If you want to do it another way, that's fine. And should observe good practice in relation to exchange and processing of data. We're going, you know, it's going back to hinting at the DPA, which I'll come back to in section five. But it's also really talking about making sure your systems are secure, making sure that you've got, you know, you're blocking the traffic that you should be blocking, and that servers are kept up to date, maintained in the appropriate way. So it's nothing really new there. Rules for service providers now then. Oh, I'll stop there. How many service providers have we got in the room? If you could raise your hand. Oh, good number of service providers. Okay, section for you. Service providers will only use attributes to make service access control or presentation decisions, and only for the services for which the attributes have been supplied. So you're not allowed to aggregate between services. You can generate aggregated anonymized usage statistics for reporting on your service or looking at how much load there is on various servers. To support service development, reporting, or by contractual agreement. That's not in version one, that final part. It's in the new version of the rules that will be coming out fairly soon, version 1.1. And we will write to all members to tell them about the rules change, and again, that's set out later in the document itself. The documents, as I mentioned earlier, is going from 12 pages to 13, so it's not exactly getting like a long document to read. The last section of that is really explanatory notes, just notes on why various things have been phrased in particular ways. And so by contracted agreement means that if the identity provider is happy the service provider collects statistics about the service to either enhance the service or to better understand how users are using it in terms of developing it, or if they want some to pull up some specific requirements, as long as the IDP is happy under that contract there for the service provider to collect those statistics, then the service provider can do that. But it has to be done in a controlled way, and that's the mechanism for doing it. And service provider responsible for the management of access rights to their service. So even though the identity provider decides to release the information, it's the service provider who's making the decision about access to their particular services. Okay, data protection and privacy. When you're talking about federations and people are trying to get their minds around what a federation is and what it means to them and how they might use it and what the difficulties might be, a lot of people keep coming back to data protection. A lot of people like to quote it, especially if they're trying to frighten somebody. Oh, data protection, be careful. You do have to be careful. It's the law. But you also need to take care to understand why it's important and how it's applicable in this case. So there's a hopefully useful model for this, if you like. If I try and explain how it fits within the Federation, if we completely step away from Federations for a moment, and say I've got a calculator on me. Say I lend my calculator to Mark, who was presenting earlier. Mark then lends it to Simon, who's going to come along and present next, and Simon then loses my calculator. Who am I going to blame for that? Well, I'm going to blame Mark because I lent it to him first, not Simon, who's lost it. It's the next step in the chain. So if we talk about information for a moment, if I give some personal information to Mark for some use, and he then gives it to Simon, and Simon publishes it mistakenly or lets it out or gives it to somebody else, I'm still going to blame Mark because he's the next step in the chain. He's the one I've trusted with my information. So if we come back to the Federation space now for a moment, and we say, I'm a user, okay, and Mark is my identity provider, if I'm trusting information to my identity provider, whom I have a relationship with, I'm doing a course, or he's providing a course or some training to me. If Mark then releases that information to a third party, a service provider, in this case Simon in the model, and that service provider loses it, I'm still going to blame Mark. I still blame the identity provider. And it's the same with the law and with data protection. If Mark, as the identity provider, releases information, third-party information about me, a user, to anybody else, legally, the identity provider is liable. Equally, if the service provider gains information about me as a user, if I log in and I give them personal information about myself, they are then responsible to maintain that information. So on the one hand, service providers would like to know, well, they need to know, that people accessing their material have the appropriate license to use to do it. There has to be a commercial model for it. On the other hand, they don't really want to deal with sensitive personal data unless they have to. Some services might require that, and that's fine. They're set up to do that. Most services don't. And most services in the Federation so far are working without using personal data. They're using this targeted ID attribute, which you'll learn more of this afternoon when Josh is talking to you. Okay, and members must use reasonable endeavours to comply with recommendations of personal use. Because of all the questions around data protection, there's a particular document addressing this, the whole document on recommendations, how to comply, what to be careful of, and how to approach it, and that's all set out in the document. So it's all put together there for you. User accountability, then. This is an optional element, and this is the only optional element, Section 6, within the rules of membership. And user accountability is, it's no more onerous than other things you're doing already, is one thing I'd say. It is something we recommend that you do, but it's not something that you have to do. And I'll try and set it in some framework in a moment. So end user organisations, which is members who are IDPs or SPs and or SPs, may declare user accountability. And what they're essentially saying is, if you tell me that this random string that I've issued you is abusing something, then I can tell you exactly who that is. So I'm keeping direct accountability. If you're connected to the JANET network, the JANET AUP is more strict than this, so you already have to do it. If you already have content through the GIST model license, it is more restricted than this, so you should already be doing this. So this goes back to basic how IDPs have set their sites up in terms of how you can trace users. You should be doing this for a whole load of other reasons, but it is optional here because there are some cases that have come up where where it's actually helpful for some people to opt out of this one. And really, that model is for if you've got a research project going on. It's just an example. If you've got a research project on, or you've got a school project going on, and you're collecting together some information about, let's pick it out. Transport problems in London, like this morning, and you want to put that together on a website, but you don't want to give everybody access to that information. In other words, you don't want to publish it on the web, but you do want to make it available to the education sector, then you need to set yourself up as a service provider, and you can, rather than set up a big user database, you can say, well, I'll just add a service provider entity to the Federation, and I can then share that information with everybody else who's a member. So in that sense, you want to be really lightweight. And what you don't want to do is say, I don't want to trace my members. I'm not interested in chasing my members, you know, being able to tell who's accessed the site. All I want to do is restrict access to it within the education space. So there's some call for this in the research side for very small projects, and there's some score with it, call for this sort of thing potentially in the school side if they're doing small sort of projects. So user accountability is optional for good reasons. If you are doing accountability now, which we'd recommend you do, end user organisations must have a documented process for issuing credentials. So this could be as simple as we issue credentials based on the registrar and the university saying so, in a college the principal saying so, in a school headmaster saying, you know, issue credentials to this person, that's what we do. If that's a written down process that says if someone tells us to make a decision to issue credentials, we've done it. You don't need to publish it. There's no requirement here for that to go onto a website somewhere. But what you do need to do is have a document ready so that if a service provider says, well, how do you go about issuing credentials, you have a story to say. So the service providers come along and say, well, why are we want to have some confidence that you're doing something sensible about issuing credentials. We don't want to give them to everybody. So they need to have confidence that you've got some systems and procedures behind the scene to back up what you're doing. So if you claim user X is user X, then they really are user X. And you must provide appropriate information to users about how to use their credentials safely and securely. So again, we're back to best practice. If you're going to issue credentials to someone, usernames and passwords possibly, then you need to be clear about giving them advice on how to use them and how not to use them. Don't post them on the internet. Don't give them to a friend, etc., etc. Accountability section goes on a little bit. If you are going down this route, then end-user organisations must ensure that that accurate information is provided. In particular, credentials from end-users must be removed promptly. So if someone leaves, then you need to make sure you update your records quickly here, or promptly. There's also this, where you're using these unique persistent identifiers that we started talking about, which are the way of maintaining privacy within the Federation, then you've got essentially what the service provider sees is a long random string of, doesn't mean a lot, it means nothing essentially. All it means is they can match the long random string next time that particular user comes back. Say no, nothing else other than it's the same user coming back, which is what they want. But if you're issuing those, you must not reissue them to a different user within 24 months, because you need to, from one perspective, you need to make sure you don't give the same credentials to two people. For obviously, you're then going to fall foul of user X seeing details, you know, potentially private information about user Y, which you don't want to do. But equally, the service provider themselves wants to make sure that if they haven't seen anyone come along for a certain period of time, they can clear out their records and logs. So there's a 24-month period written in there so that the mechanism can actually work. And other information about end users must be updated promptly. The third point there about logging is, again, best practice in the sector. If you're doing access control decisions, you need to keep your logging information, minimum of 3 months, maximum of 6. It changes over time. You need to keep an eye on what the latest legal recommendations are, but 3 to 6 months is where we are at the moment. If you do receive a complaint or you are involved in an incident in some way, then you do need to have some effort there to make sure you can actually respond to that and deal with something promptly. Section 7, then, running on. This sets out disclaimers, limits of liabilities within the Federation. So 3 points really to mentally take away. Membership does not create any enforceable rights or obligations between the Federation operator and member. So the Federation operator, in providing you this fabric, doesn't take any liability, and there's no relationship between us as operator and you as member, other than between members, which you've all agreed to sign up to the rules of membership, which is essentially a federation. You've all agreed to sign up to the same rules. But the document doesn't set up any enforceable rights between the federation operator and a member. Membership does not create any enforceable rights between you as members. So just because you're members of the federation and you signed up to the same set of rules, you've got no obligations on each other other than what's set up. Other than what you've seen here, but there's no rights associated, sets up, or any liability. So you've signed up, but you're not signing up to any liability in that sense. And members may agree variations to the exclusions of liability with other members. So if you particularly want to cite, you know, you want to, with a particular program of work, set up a liability if, you know, access to your particular resource is, you know, or release of that data is so valuable or so libelous, if it does get out, that you want other protection in there, then you can do it. You know, set a contract up in a normal way. So we're not restricting that, but what we are saying is that that agreement goes back to the triangle that you saw. It's the site license between the service provider and the identity provider. It's not part of the rules of membership, and it's not enforceable through the rules of membership. Audit and compliance, then, as you'd expect, if you're putting it as a sort of framework of trust together, you need to be able to audit. It's not the Federation operator has the right to audit the systems and member processes and the document and documentation to verify you're complying with the rules. We're not anticipating a big audit schedule here going around looking at all the members. This is really in response to complaints or concerns that are raised. So if someone's having difficulty or complaints stack up against a particular organisation, we have the right to go in and audit them. We're using third parties and say, kind of, what's going on here, what's sort of falling down, where are we seeing the problems? We'll obviously help before that, but we formally got the right to do it within the rules of membership. And if the Federation, this is the really big stick now, Federation operator has reasonable grounds for believing the members not complying with the rules and following a notice period, following a, you can read it all in Section 8, following a whole set of steps, ultimately we remove someone from the Federation. So if ultimately someone's abusing it, we can remove them. Termination then, following on from that, people can withdraw, or join, withdraw, nothing stopping them doing that. And ultimately the funding councils could equally decide that they don't want to fund Federation service, so they've got a get-out clause as well. We're not anticipating any of this, but it's there because you'd expect it to be there in the rules membership as a formal mechanism so people can actually set it up, close it down. It needs to be there. Consequences of cessation of membership now, pushing on. If you remove yourself as a member, then we'll stop publishing your metadata. And we'll also tell everybody else that you're not a member, because they may still push, if they've not updated their metadata, they may still try to make access control decisions fired at you, and that may cause them problems. So we'll tell everybody if you're going to leave, that's fine. And then organisations at their own cost will cease to hold themselves out as a member, so don't try and pretend to be a member, fairly self-evident, and remove logo and details about the Federation from material that you're using. Section 11 deals with changes to the rules, so if we're going to change the rules, which we're about to change the rules, we're about to do an amendment from version 1 to 1.1, then we'll get them approved through the policy board, we'll publish the amendments, we'll write to all members and give you notice that we're changing them, but they're not changing very much. They're really, the main changes are adding some explanatory notes, which I mentioned at the back of the document, and we're responding to some suggestions that we've had from existing members to say, could you clarify this bit for us? So we've changed a few bits to hopefully make them more, to make the document itself clearer and to be less ambiguous. And there's a new section or new element going in on liability to be very, very clear that nobody has any liability for joining any way, any shape or form. But you can read about it in version 1.1. 12, dispute resolution. This is really says, do it within the Federation mechanisms without recourse to the courts. So if anyone's got any issues, there's an escalation mechanism within the rules that, so people can resolve it rather than spend a lot of money on going through the legal system. That's it for me.